Hi, and welcome to another Bjorfest Brewers Roundtable. This was kind of a special one because it marked the start of our branching out beyond Ireland into Europe as a whole. And so as to join us on that one, we had Francois from Peak Beer in Belgium. He was joined by Johnny from Trouble and Dave from Brewmaster. And we had a good chat about beers, about tradition, about, you know, cultures, and good comparison across, you know, Ireland to Belgium. So it was a nice start to what has really branched out. After this week, you'll see we have a lot of cross-European breweries. So this was the very first one, and it was fun, and I think you'll enjoy it. Now, before I play it for you, I just want to remind you that if you want to see the videos instead, they're available on the website, bjorfest.com. You can also register there and actually come and join us live any week. You know, just one registration gets you your link, that's accessible for all events. And it's good to just come along and have a chat, maybe, you know, throw in some comments on that. And finally, if you do like this podcast, we wouldn't mind if you rated it. It would be very helpful. So that's all the homework out of the way, and I'm going to let you listen to the session itself. Enjoy. So we have with us today, we have Dave from Dundalk's Brewmaster, we have Johnny from Trouble, and for our first time we have a Belgian person, Francois from Peak Beer. So the only theme I could come up with really this time was, assuming the weather's nice and we're all able to join, that we have a barbecue. So everybody picked a couple of beers that they felt of their own beers that they'd bring to a barbecue. That would be good for sitting around for a few hours in the sun. Also, Francois, you picked two. Johnny picked three, cheated, and
I didn't realize it was only two.
I don't know if that was a cheating because we were around it. But I think there was certain trends there that matched. No one picked stouts or any heavy beers. You all picked at least one relatively light one, and Francois picked the only high alcohol one with the 8%. But everyone else, Dave was around 5%, and Johnny was around 5% and 3%, I think. So certain trends that matched up there. But so I don't know, who'd like to, there was also mainly, I think, reflective of kind of the culture. Johnny's were all IPAs. If you had an IPA and a lager, and Francois went for the old Belgian triples and the blonde. So who'd like to go first and tell us what you brought? Johnny, do you want to pick one of yours?
Sure. Let's see what we've got here. Go maybe with the Vietnam, maybe.
Okay.
That's so, one of my favorites.
So, Francois, you won't have tasted this before, will you?
Nope.
Are you a big IPA fan or mainly?
Yeah. Actually, would have sent an IPA too, but it's brand new, and it's a bit more alcohol. So
okay.
I hesitated it and I didn't take it.
So we've got a couple of people starting to come in. Hey, Brandon. Let's begin. I mean, an IPA.
Fairly classic beer stuff at this stage. You know, being the kind of the flagship of the industry, I suppose.
Yeah.
Although I always find myself going back, as increasingly as kind of the East Coast stuff becomes more and more prevalent, I still find myself going back to West Coast styles, and I still love something that's punchy and bitter, and it's got a bit of chewiness. Like there's a good bit of Crystal Rye in the Vietnam, which gives that bit more. And I just kind of find that I like the juice bombs, I like these stuff, but I always just go back to something that's bitter and punchy.
Right.
You know?
That's something I noticed. Dave, yours was kind of that style as well, was it?
Yeah, it's kind of more on the traditional style than the big kind of overboard American style or even West Coast style. Again, it's just some nice malty sweetness, a bit of chew, and some kind of a nice little hop character to it as well.
Yeah.
You know, just you don't want to overdo it when we're talking about beers that go with barbecues. You know, you don't want a big overly in your face. Like I think Vietnam is a great choice. The IPA and what a would have liked to try the Belgian IPA, but we can try that another time maybe.
Yeah,
well, we get to French fizz in a while because I thought there was, let's get to it in a while because I thought it was a bit more hoppy than the typical triple.
Yeah, actually. So firstly, the reason I took those two beer, maybe the first one, as you would think, IPA, really light beer for barbecues. When you're drinking something in the sun, you really have to have something that is that quenches your thirst. So that would be the summer, which is kind of a strange beer. Some people here in Belgium confuse it with a wheat beer. It's actually got no wheat at all. But we do use mandarina juice directly in the boil. We have a little dry hop on that beer. So it's really refreshing beer. So this one is the one I would pick for summertime and for barbecues. And then the triple, I had to take it because that's what a typical Belgian would take for a barbecue. Belgians will, I don't know why, but Belgians will always go for the higher alcohol stuff. So that's why I took the triple. And generally, for my part, I'm not such a fan of Belgian triple. But this one is a bit different compared to the, let's say, standard Belgian stuff.
Yeah.
This is a triple at 8.5% alcohol, so this is pretty normal. But we do have a slight dry hopping with a Citra hop, which gives it a little twist, a better nose, I think.
Yeah, we kind of wandered off here because we started with Johnny's and we started talking about the other one, so that's typical. But I know Francois sent two bottles of each of his. So did you taste any of them beforehand, or have you?
No, I haven't. I'm really talking about a triple in particular, but I've been wanting to save it.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we'll come back to them. So, but I suppose the idea behind the barbecue is really, you just want to sit out there for a few hours so you don't have something that you're going to fall over after like an hour or something, and it has to match a couple of different foods. So that's the ideal barbecue, I suppose, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah,
is something then light. We noticed as well, Johnny, and Dave, like both years, the cans specifically mentioned stuff about what foods to pair with and stuff like that on the website and the can. So you were thinking about that already.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of the reasons why I pick it now is I feel that it's a fairly diverse one, and it's the kind of thing that I don't eat meat, I'm a vegetarian, but I'd still eat it with a lot of like gofio, like sweet potato and falafel and stuff like that. The kind of things that vegetarians are forced to eat at barbs. So I think that it kind of pairs quite well with that, which is what I kind of like, and it's one of my, again, kind of go-tos in the summer and for my veggie burgers on the barbecue.
Right. Yeah. I'm still off on that. I know IPAs they've just been the only craft beer, really. They kind of dominated for the last number of, 10 years, even 15 years, probably. Whereas... I mean, we'll get around to Dave now in a while. Like, you brought in a lager. You don't, that was a bit different from the IPA. It's at least, it's a bit less hoppy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, but the idea with that was when I was bringing the IPA and kind of the other beer that I would probably drink at a barbecue would be either lager or red ale.
Right.
I was conscious with sending a beer to Belgium that I wasn't sure how bottles would travel. So I took in the lager for that. Again, it's like 4.9%. It's a thirst quencher. What you want sitting around at a barbecue. It is a pilsner, but we do have a little twist in it where we've a little late addition of citra in it. So it just has a slight kind of not the most traditional pilsner.
Yeah.
But you know, in a fresh drinking on a sunny day.
And so you're all like, do you think? I suppose like hops. You're all very very focused on hops. The three, are you?
I usually would drink stouts and stuff more. I'd say I'd be more on my dark beers personally, my own drinking. But like you were saying, it's not like barbecue isn't the most apt place to crack open 11% bourbon barrel aged sherry cask finished, which would be what I'd prefer to take, to be honest. But.
Okay. And how would you? Any other stout drinkers there?
Yeah, I love malty, like the maltier beers and. You know, I'm a really big fan of brown ale and of a German dunkel and stuff, but just never seem to sit right in the summertime. Sunny weather is kind of as it gets later in the year, and I hope to brew and put out a couple of darker beers, but again, it's just not the time.
We had the cider people on last week, so that it's really coming into their territory now, I suppose.
Yeah.
Something light and something that you just, you can sit there for a while and just down a few of them, like without worrying about what's going to happen or where you're going to go or how you're going to fall over or anything like that. Francois, in Belgium, I mean, Belgium obviously has its own, you know, lot of styles of beers and that. Are IPAs becoming more popular, more hoppy beers there, or is it still very traditional, like in Belgium? I guess
it is still traditional. There's a lot of I'd say new breweries are all falling into the IPA stuff, which is really good. Yeah, I said, I'm not such a fan of traditional Belgian beer, I have to say. No. And I like as well stouts, but you have to say that in the sun for a barbecue, it's a bit difficult to be drinking big stouts.
Yeah. I think we can all agree on that one. Though I'd be with Johnny. I think that would be a good dark beer. I do like them.
Yeah. And I would say the one dark beer that I will bring to barbecue is a good Rauch beer. Is always a good shape for barbecue. And it's something that I've brought up to friends before and be like, oh, drink this. You'll never guess what this tastes like. I think that's a fun one for anything to do with smoked foods. It's always good for shape.
Right. And the Vietnam was, how many different hops are in there?
Five. So we've got, if you can remember now, Columbus, Simcoe, Azga, Amarillo, and Citra.
Right. That's quite a lot, though. Is that how much this was? Normally it's about three types of hops would be typical for most.
Yeah, probably it depends though, usually about that. But we've got quite a few different additions as well. So there's a lot gets thrown at different times.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think it's unusual with West Coast to have like mad kind of hop bills where you'd 7-8 different types of hops. You know, five or six, sometimes you see them, 5-6 different kettle additions, and then blends of 3-5 different hops across your dry hop. I think smash beers and single hop beers are kind of gone. And with the way hop prices kind of went for a while, I think people got into blending hops, you know, to get the flavors of hops I can get, you know, some of the crazy New Zealand and Australian hops that were all the rage and then couldn't be got, you know, match them flavor profiles.
Right.
And kind of playing around with blending hops then has become a big thing, and especially on the dry hop end of things.
Okay, yeah, because it sounded like a lot to me, like, how do you know what's coming out? How can you even predict or try and, like, it just sounded like kind of showing off. Look, we'd use this number of hops and that's it. And, you know, but you had no clue what you were actually planning for or something.
I think it can be taught out a little bit. And once they're complementary and they're not kind of contrasting each other, you know, if it works, it works. You know, and some hops are better supported by another. Like Citra will always bring out an extra little bit out of Azaka and other hops like that. So sometimes actually complementing one hop with another is more beneficial to the beer.
Okay. Yeah, Francois was nodding away there in agreement. Yeah, so Francois, let's get on to one of yours there for a second. I don't know, maybe the triple might be too strong for this time of day, is it? Or what do you think? Do you want
to run? I'd quite like to try the triple, to be honest.
Okay, go for the triple.
I've been looking forward to it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, the Belgian triple typically wouldn't be very hoppy, I suppose.
No, typically no. Belgian triples are generally more on the yeast. Aromas. Right. But here we have a little Citra in it.
I noticed that there was a bit more just that edge of a hop taste on it, you know, that more than you'd expect. So I mean, you're up in the highest point in Belgium, which is not very high really, but
no. kind of a joke actually.
I mean, and you've got a restaurant there as well, isn't it? You've got a restaurant. Yeah. And so was the restaurant first and then you started brewing afterwards, or did you start up the brewery? You know, which came first, the restaurant or the brewery?
I'm not actually there since the beginning of the brewery, but I think they started the restaurant pretty much at the same time.
Okay.
A couple months separating the two. They started brewing before they started cooking.
Okay. And that's the difference between you and the other two lads here. Like, you don't, you have somewhere you can just, or at least when pre-COVID times, where you have a distribution built into to where you're producing the beers, whereas that the legislation in Ireland is much harder, so they can't, yeah. Can't even have tap rooms. It's just you have to get the distribution.
You can't at all.
No,
oh,
no, it's a bit of, it's pretty restrictive.
Oh shit! So yeah, we actually do pretty much between 20% and 30% of volume on site, so which is really cool.
that's the dream, to be honest.
Yeah.
We have those big ass 500 liter tanks right above the tap.
Oh.
So we have three of them. So it's really nice. But they haven't been used since like a little bit more than 6 months because of all this crisis. So that's a bit sad.
Well, I suppose that's the one thing really when you, from that point of view, Johnny and Dave, like at least he already had that distribution, so probably if anything, your sales have gone up, have you?
Of off license stuff, certainly, and obviously our draft fell to the floor.
But yeah.
Certainly off license sales, yeah, didn't.
Yeah, because I know was on last week up in Bullhouse, they were saying that the difficulty in having draft, kind of distribution and being focused on cans and small packs is that when things did go bad, you were kind of on the leading edge of stuff. You were able to handle it. You didn't have to scramble around trying to find the lost volume.
Yeah. Certainly we had to kind of go through a transition there because we were really more focused on draft kind of pre-lockdown. We had to kind of make a big switch then.
But you were still, I thought you were still mainly through off-license distribution.
No, pre-lockdown our sales were vast majority draft.
Okay. How about you, Dave? You were redraft as well?
Kind of. It felt to us at the same time where we were just getting listings and kind of retailers for cans and stuff. So but it would have been probably 40% of the business was draft in Dublin accounts. But that was met up for very, very quickly.
Okay.
As we just started to hit into retail stores, our sales team just switched straight away and just put a big focus on kind of getting ourselves shelf space across. And yeah, the last 12 months were every week is busier than the last. We've been in a position that, we managed to carry, make that production kind of carry on. And yeah, no, it's grown at a rapid rate.
Right. No, I hadn't realized that. I thought you were always kind of the two. You were always mainly off, since that it was harder to get into the pubs. So that's some news for me. So, what do you think of this one anyway? About the triple with compared to a typical Belgian triple.
I really like the little citrus. You can get the yeast character, but a little citrus at the end of it.
It just gives that little bit of sharpness and a little bit of acidity. So I think works really, really well, and stops it in a way. Just stops it actually being super rich and super kind of heavy. It really kind of brings in
and is that a good for you, Francois, or does it do most Belgians that you kind of, when you give it to them, do they take a step back and say what have you done?
No, it's actually it's our best seller with the blonde. Those two are pretty much all our sales.
Right, so yeah, because that's the other thing I suppose I was thinking about is like Belgium with its tradition, it's got its own traditional beers, and that has that held back kind of stuff in Belgium a lot that people are just afraid to take down until recently. Because
we have a really hard time doing new stuff, doing something that is not traditional. Even for IPAs, for example, the IPA that we made, I would have liked to do an IPA at 4 or 5% alcohol. It was clear from my boss and marketing and stuff that we had to go higher. We're doing an IPA at 6.5. That's pretty much the market because Belgium won't buy it if it's not at least 6. So, which is, it's, might be a good thing, might be a bad thing.
It's kind of strange because, I mean, you've all the beers, like I said, you know, about, I don't know how many different types of beers and brands and stuff, and it never, you know, it's never became like Ireland or like the Netherlands or something where one dominated. Like, you slid all the brands, but I think Jupiler is still 40% of the market, isn't it? And that's not a very it's not a good beer at all. It's a weird situation. Anyone here who's been over to Belgium, tried out Belgian beers a lot?
Years ago, before I was in the kind of brewing trade, I was out there and I was just amazed by like that, the range of styles, and every pub you went into had a wider range of glassware, because every single beer had its own glass and they mined it so well and they present it so well, and you know, we've breweries like,
oh wow.
you don't see that sort of thing, and you get a half and it's thrown to you in a Guinness glass or a Carlsberg glass half the time. There's in Belgium, if the beer doesn't come in, it's not presented. It's very glass. The bar staff are unhappy about it. Like, you know, it's a great.
Yeah, there's a theatre to it. Like,
yeah,
yeah. Because the difference as well is that I don't know. I mean, Francois's draft is not as big in Belgium at all, is it? I mean, it's you do get it mainly in bottles. The bar staff come in bottles and that, don't they?
Yeah, there's a really strong tradition as well on bottles.
Which probably, cans haven't taken off in quite the same either.
Not really. We have made in the past some cans. We were planning to do some pretty much now, but we had to, take a choice because of the crisis, and we don't really know what's going to happen. And we don't have a canning line, so we have some people coming to can on site, so it does cost a little.
Right.
But otherwise, yeah, generally, I mean, there's really not a lot of people who try it. I have actually heard not long ago a small microbrewery who started doing only cans, which is nice. But it's, yeah, there's not a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I noticed that difference as well. That I know that I've seen ads. I think Brussels Beer Project are starting, that they have some in cans and that they've been advertising them a lot, but mainly it's bottles. And
the Shoof have just started doing cans as well, haven't they? I think.
Have they?
Yeah, I think the offer is down the road for me here. You can get the Shoof in cans, but only recently. And I will admit, even though I'm a craft beer person, the can, it does look weird seeing the Shoof in cans. I'm suspicious of it, quite frankly.
Yeah, I wonder, is it export only?
Could be.
In Belgium, I think people really have in their minds that good beers are in bottles and bad beers are in cans. Because the Jupiler, for example, is you can find it at cans. I mean, only the bad brands do really big quantities of cans. And so there's really this in people's head, and it's really hard to go against it. But I don't know if you noticed, but we do have a special bottle. It's actually really black. You really can't see through it. So it's kind of our way to try and mitigate. So it really doesn't let the light go through it.
Yeah.
It does have a problem, though, because you can't see the level in the bottle when you're bottling. It's not always useful.
I think a little bit of that mentality was here in Ireland a couple of years ago. You know, when even just before kind of craft started going to cans. And when it did, you know, it was always that can, or like walking down the street with a bag of cans a couple of years ago was accurate. Whereas now you can be sitting in good restaurants and hotels, and you know where you've been served cans. And some people I think still can't get their head around it, but it is really it's changing. But it's gone through a drastic change in the last kind of four or five years maybe.
Yeah. You know,
originally it wouldn't have been as accepted.
Yeah.
So everything seems to be in cans.
I really hope it comes here in Belgium also. I have spoken with some American brewers, and they told me that it was the same thing in the US pretty much 10 years ago. It was also cans worth for bad beers. The market changed. So maybe if you're already there, maybe it'll come here.
But apart from like the actual stocking of them in the supermarket, like what's the advantage can?
For the quality.
Quality, yeah. It's a much more efficient airtight seal.
Right.
Crown cap. And also, they're fully recyclable and much easier recyclable than the glass, which is environmentally, it's just
a
massive thing.
It's lighter as well. It cools faster.
You get more units on the pallet and everything. So, again, that's environmental. Right. You know,
I hadn't thought about it. Yeah, that not the hacking on the thing. Yeah, and the lightness is, you're just not shipping a load of heavy weight like for nothing.
And then your protection from UV light, and once your oxygen levels are controlled, is very little oxidation in a can, whereas over it always will be oxidation in a bottle as the plastic on the bottom of the lid kind of will slowly allow some ingress, and so you've better stability and shelf life and
I think we did just there. So what do you think? So you're in favour of the triple anyway with some extra hops.
Definitely, I think it works really nicely. I think it's not too overpowering. It's just kind of balanced it just right.
Right.
Yeah, it adds a freshness. I still have that now after finishing a little bit of it, a bit of that sweetness. But as you're drinking it, it doesn't build and become cloying like some triples and some Belgians can. Right. That's it. The touch of citrus just gives it a freshness that makes it more drinkable.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. I'm just looking here at some of the questions. So anyone got a question here for Kate of what would go well with barbecue pork?
IPA.
Maybe an amber lager.
Okay.
A nice Mars might go well.
None of you came along with an amber lager though, did you?
I was thinking of bringing the Maybach, do a Maybach, and I was just thinking about 6.5%, maybe I might leave it off, and now that I see
you imagine sitting down for whatever 3-hour barbecue facing just loads of bottles of 8%. Because first time going to Brussels, and I probably did whatever Irish person did, like treat it as if it's a pint of a light lager, and you just sat there and fell off the stool after a while.
Jelly legs came.
Yeah. Didn't realize like that the typical one there was 8% in a pub, and that was that was this. But sure, we live and learn. Since we have so many different beers, we get a better onto another one. We mentioned there that Belgian styles and the IPAs are only kind of starting, maybe the hops become there. What do you think in Ireland though? It's mainly like the Belgians haven't taken the majority of the market, have they? Like Belgian styles, where do they fit in?
No, I suppose not a huge amount. I mean, there's the odd one does knock around. I know. I remember Wicklow Wolf did a Belgian brown ale a few years ago in bottle, which I remember was really, really excellent. Yeah. And Mescam West do some really, really good Belgian style stuff.
Mess kind of lead the way on the Irish front, I think, and
definitely.
Belgium. Rye River, I think, had I think a barrel aged quad, I think last Christmas or something, and White Hag have done one or two, I think, Belgian IPAs and stuff. Right.
And actually Canvas Brewing down to Brewery has started doing some good stuff. Like quite a nice Flanders Red from them. Okay. In Cannes actually, like 2 weeks ago, which I liked quite a lot.
So it's beginning, but the palate, I suppose, just for some reason, just seems to be a bit different.
Yeah, because they tend to be quite, like, if you take the normal narrative being kind of IPAs and stuff, I mean, it's quite a jump to go to an Oud Bruin or a Abbey style double or something like that. They are very different beers. And like Franco was saying about the profile being a lot more emphasized on the phenolic kind of flavors rather than the hops and the malt that we might be used to. It's kind of a really different kettle of fish, I suppose, market wise.
Right. And I don't have much knowledge on this. Belgian beers are characterized a lot by it's a particular strains of yeast, is it? That have just been kept. Is that what defines them, or
we can say that.
Yeah, but would it be true?
I think I'd say old big breweries, they have all their own strains that they really keep for themselves. Well, it isn't really true for small new breweries. Okay. We tend to go for commercial strains, I'd say.
Okay, and then you try and play with the other ingredients to make it taste.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But the traditional styles always try to emphasize the yeast aromas. Okay. That's always the case.
What do you think? I mean, you see whiskies now, they're always going, you know, they're getting very detailed on where they get the ingredients. You have your QR codes on the back and you can scan it and they'll tell you when they planted the barley, when they harvested it, you know, this whole thing. Do you think that's something that can come down the line with beer, or that should come down the line with beer?
Was it Moran Mountains have tried something along those lines before with blockchain? It was QR codes and trace right back. It may come down the line. I don't know if there's
a demand for it.
An appetite, I think. Beer drinkers want to know that the brewers and the breweries are, you know, finding the best quality ingredients that they can, locally sourcing, and yeah, all those considerations are put in. And when you're creating a beer, it is down to what the person sitting at home is going to be like. You're not making the beer for yourself, you know, on the volumes that we're doing. So yeah, those considerations are, but I don't know if somebody who wants, like, you know, like that, a juicy New England style IPA, is they want to know what hops are in it. I don't have the same level of consideration to where did the barley, wheat, oats, flaked wheat, or anything like that come from.
Right.
I may be wrong. I think the hops, and yeah, I think the other focuses.
So it's going to be more, yeah, they're going to trust the brand of the brewery to be picking the style, and then just trust that's the story rather than the individual beer, is it?
Yeah, and it's great to be with, and I think Irish consumers would like breweries to be working with Irish malt where possible, but again, that's only possible on base malts. You know, I suppose there's one craft maltings in the country which is doing speciality malt. But aside from that, all speciality malt is coming from coming from Belgium or England anyway, you know, because we don't have the facilities here.
Okay.
Yeah. You know? And likewise, I mean, almost all the hops are coming forward, and often from very far afield, from the west coast of the States or New Zealand or Australia. The hop industry just doesn't exist in Ireland, by and large.
So, yes, so it's just relying on is that the same in with you, Francois, that people come to you, they're not looking for where you found the individual ingredients, they just want the beer and that you made it. And that's that.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only thing that is important.
Right. So look, let's get on to a different one here. Dave, you had your house party, which was the only lager that anybody, or Pilsner lager, that anybody picked. It kind of surprised me. I suppose I thought there would have been another one in there. But
as I said, for me, it was a tough kind between House Party and the Maybach.
But you felt the Maybach was too strong.
I thought the Maybach was going to be too strong, and then Francois just threw in a late sentence. So,
you think I'm taking my Imperial Stout log?
Yeah, so again, it's a clean, crisp lager. It's unfiltered, and then... As I was saying earlier on, we have a little late citra addition, which just kind of gives it a slight little twist on the pilsner and a little kind of fresh edge on it.
So. Right. What's the verdict?
Positive, I think. I think it's nice. It's got a little bit, like, just a little touch of sweetness, which I think kind of balances out and, like, stops it from being too thin, which I think is kind of that risk you're looking with, particularly with the pilsner. It's just a kind of washing away from you. I think it just kind of has that little bit of body, that little bit of chewiness. It just kind of keeps it buoyant.
Right.
Yeah, and like that, we have three lagers. We've our light lager, which is gluten-free, and that is that crisp, dry, you know, lager. We've our Maybach, which is a nice, malty, almost chewy lager. You know, so this kind of sits right in the middle then for us.
What do you think, Francois?
There's a nice bitterness that really stays long. It's really nice.
You think that would go down well with your clientele?
Sorry?
Would that go down well with your customers, that style? Or would they still want the the triple and that's it, nothing else.
This one I would really be curious to know. I think it would really go well. That would be something I would like to try.
We have to send over a couple more cans and he can just test out a few customers.
Yeah.
Sorry, just Paul here is asking, we're getting recommendations now. What beer would you recommend with lamb? Which of your beers would they be suitable for lamb?
To drink with lamb or to cook them?
Drink, I think. Yeah, it must be to drink because he did a lamb on the barbecue.
Ha, that's a hard one because lamb is quite very aromatic meat. So I would tend to go for a brown beer, I think. But in summer in a barbecue, maybe not. So
you could maybe go for the Maybach, actually, for the lamb.
I've actually never done lamb on the barbecue, so.
I think it's pretty unusual, all right, with many beef and burgers and sausages and stuff. So
I think if any of them, I'd be going with the triple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I just think the triple of, for me, I'm going to leave it at that. I can't think of the rest of the words.
I think that's fair. I think because the triple certainly has a little bit more richness and maybe a little bit more sweetness, which might go, as I said, with Carmatic meat. In that regard, that I think the Vietnam maybe just be too acidic and the lager would maybe just be kind of a bit too malty.
Mm.
See, I have no clue on this. I'd end up picking just one beer at the start thing. And what food comes, that's it. I'm stuck with
it. Stick to your guns.
Yeah, that's it. The food just comes and goes and gets stuffed in. So that's it. So
I don't know about you guys, but I tend to think that IPAs for eating is not that good because if the food is not that strong in spices and stuff, the IPA tends to really knock all the aromas out, and you only you only smell and drink the IPA. The rest doesn't taste a lot.
Yeah, I think the IPAs lend themselves nicely to spicy dishes or fruity dishes, and that's like even like a pulled pork where you've kind of a little bit of both on you and sweetness to it. An IPA can complement again hot wings or any of the spicier stuff. Yeah, I think it would work. I think overly hoppy and kind of the mad, Americans. Some of the overly hoppy kind of American styles mightn't, but I think with Vietnam, the two that we have in front of us, Vietnam has enough the character from, and it has a nice little spice from the rye, and our IPA is a little bit, is more malt forward. I think they would sit better with food than kind of purely hop driven IPAs.
Right.
Yeah, I would think so. I think definitely the malt character you're saying is key there. I mean, if it's a very pale IPA that's very kind of top heavy on the hops, it's definitely going to kind of just wash away everything else. But you need like that little bit of chewiness, that little bit of kind of something in the body to kind of carry it.
I suppose that also depends then on how good of a barbecue you're having. If it's just kind of
very true,
eating everything and it's just half burnt and stuff, then you just want to have something to get rid of that taste. So, yeah, so Dave, let's stick with yours. So you've the IPA there you just mentioned as well.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yeah, so IPA, it comes in at about 5.6%. Again, as I say, and we kind of clearly label it as Irish IPA, so people aren't expecting a big West Coast or New England IPA. Like, the range of IPAs now is, from light colored and crystal clear to black, and every shade in between. And sometimes people see IPA and they're expecting that. It's because the market has been so dominated with American IPAs that they're expecting that, where this is more, it's the traditional style of IPA, but we're using American hops, so it's not quite an English IPA.
Right. Not
an IPA, so we kind of landed with it's an Irish IPA.
Yeah, how does that work? I mean, like you said, everything is IPA, and I think we had this once there, like, people are just calling everything an IPA just because of themselves. How do you now differentiate at all, or can you, or like how are you letting people know what to expect or what they should be getting?
Well, so it's very hard, and especially with the terms like Irish IPA, there's a couple of breweries that use it and have been using it for a couple of years, but again, it has no real definition, But I think the principle is the same. It's based on the traditional kind of English style IPA, but using the American hops. So we're neither one or the other. you know, and it was kind of where I suppose beer trends and the market led us into producing our IPAs. And it's a nice introduction to people who aren't kind of used to the style, and people who are coming over from ale drinkers to like, right. you hand them a big hop bomb from Irish or American brewery, and you know, you scared them back into a pint of Smithwick. You know, whereas this is a nice kind of entry level, you know, a gateway beer nearly, you know, into the kind of what is craft.
So do you see it as part of a scale from your, like, the house party towards this? Is that's they're kind of on a scale there, do you think?
Yeah, well, like, we had, I think that's why we have the three lagers, where we have our light lager, which it would be very focused towards your macro lager drinkers. And then once they kind of see that and get comfortable with that, they might evolve or kind of grow into trying the house party and then go in the Maybach. And, you know, there's a progression there into new styles and new tastes and new trends. So I think the IPA will work kind of similarly. And it introduces people then to, obviously, the brand and the core range. And, you know, so.
And you're going through a bit of a rebrand moment, are you? I saw the website's down there.
It's only recently relaunched the rebrand. I joined back in June. I think the rebrand had just wasn't long after taking place. So I think last year, either late 2019 or early 2020, the rebrand came about. We've our core range there now in place, which is 7 beers, which is quite kind of extensive on a core range. And now we're moving into kind of one Austin specials, and you know, we've a couple of interesting specials coming down the line now as well, which, again, once people have introduced through the core, hopefully they start to pick these up. So
what do you think of this, Johnny, this one compared to...
I really like it. I really like the body in particular. Again, that, like, chewing thing. Were you saying that there's a little bit of rye in this as well?
No. So it's a little bit of Crystal Malt, a little bit of Munich.
And just give it a little bit of sweetness and stuff, which I really like. I mean, I've never really liked those kind of wet IPAs that are really pale and really bitter, but just kind of so poorly balanced, in my opinion. I just kind of end up being so top heavy.
Right. Yeah.
I like to have that little bit of richness of body, maybe because I am a dark beer drinker by and large. I just think it kind of brings out and just gives it, that's everything kind of just needs so much more. So much better.
Yeah.
It's kind of really juicy, eh? The body with the aromas, it gives it really the feel that you're drinking juice. So it's really nice.
Yeah. So what juice? Orange juice or... You're just bringing orange juice to the barbecue and just fire it all back and keep going.
I tried to do that once when I was home brewing. I did an orange juice infused dry hopped IPA, and I can tell you that it was absolutely fucking terrible. I want to go put an orange in it, to be honest. That doesn't work.
Well, Francois, the one has mandarin juice, don't you?
There's one with the mandarin juice. And actually, at home, I tried once, but with the orange peel. That can be interesting, actually. End of boil.
Oh, so would that be more similar, in a way, to kind of traditional Belgian wit? Because that would have orange peel at the end of the boil, wouldn't it? With the coriander.
Yeah. In fact, but it's they use a special kind of orange, and generally they use it dried out. I'd say. I tried once with fresh oranges at home, and that was nice. It's actually better than the dried orange that they use in the brew.
Oranges.
So yeah, so tell us about the mandarin one. This one struck me as the most summery one.
Yeah. It's actually, for the moment, it's my favorite.
Which I suppose you called it summer, so I wasn't part of the track there. Like, I can't pretend I knew anything. I just
we're not too funky with the names, I have to admit. It's like blonde, triple, summer, winter.
Yeah.
Would you say, is that a product of kind of a Belgian consistent kind of craft beer industry, that if you're a bit too funky and out there, are people a bit suspicious, non-traditional kind of aspect of it?
I mean, if you look in the markets, it's not funky. They all name their beer by the name of the brewery, blonde, brown, triple, whatever. So I think we do the same. I'm not sure it's really a reflection behind it. What else to say?
Yeah, Belgium's kind of I suppose, like I said, you know, you managed to keep all the different breweries and local brands, but it's, you know, which gave you your own beers now, whereas everyone else was basically steamrollered by Heineken, Carlsberg, and Guinness and that, whereas you managed to keep it, but probably that very conservative sort of outlook now as well.
Yeah, we are a bit conservative now. There's advantage and disadvantage.
Yeah.
We have some beers that are really, I'd say, worldwide known. But then, like I said, we don't really have the choice because the market in Belgium at least won't take of differences. I mean, I'd like to brew a stout, for example. But the question is not if we could brew it, it's if we could sell it, because there are really not a lot of people that would drink stouts here. So that's really a problem when you want to do really different beers compared to the traditional stuff. It's really hard to go in the market.
And are you selling a lot off premise as well? Or are you relying on then that you have your customers there that you can educate them, or do you have to be able to sell this into the shops as well?
We have to be able to sell it anywhere, actually. Right. So in our restaurant, we could sell pretty much anything, as long as it's good, of course. But then when we go another...
the next level.
Yeah, next level, not sure. Then we rely on if people like it, if it's not too much different. So I think we have to go to a phase where we try to do, you said, a little bit different, and then go, and then I'd say gradually go to something more interesting and more different.
Okay.
But not in one time. This is actually already a start. I mean, it's a really light beer. It was, actually the only light beer in Belgium is the wheat beer. But this is not a wheat beer. So it's really light. It's got a little dry hopping. As I said, we use mandarina juice. So it's really nice. It's very dry, I think. Sure. I don't know what you think about that. But I think that for a light beer like this, being really dry and having the little dry hopping, it's really thirst quenching.
Definitely. I think it's really, definitely really refreshing. And I think the mandarin gives it, particularly on the nose, like just kind of a little kind of like hint of like kind of tartness almost, which gives it that little kind of little cut, which is really, really nice. And again, just kind of accentuates that whole kind of very refreshing kind of thing that's got going on.
Yeah, it's actually quite acid as well, because the mandarin juice is really acid.
Yeah,
and I think the high carbonation kind of benefits then completely, and it's just it's a thirst quencher. It's it's exactly what you want on a really hot day.
I don't know in Ireland, but actually in Belgium today it's not really hot. Good weather for Belgium, but it's like 10 degrees or something.
Yeah, it's not overly hot here either. That's why I'm sitting inside. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, well, I walked to the shop in my T-shirt earlier, not because it was that warm, just because I felt it was possible. I wanted to just get a match of it, to be honest. It's about 12 degrees, and it's...
Yeah.
I'm going to take that as a good day.
At least it's not snowing like it was, just 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's crazy.
Actually, in the highest point in Belgium, we still had snow at the beginning of the week.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I like the fact that you really emphasize it in the name. And you are the highest point. So we're coming towards your Johnny. We can't get you because you cheated with three. So pick one of the other ones.
Fair. We'll go for the Love Below, will we?
Yeah, this is the lightest or the lowest alcohol.
This is our micro IPA, as we call it.
So we had Francois with his 8%. The rest of them were on the 5%, and this is 3. So if you were starting off a barbecue, you could start with one triple, and then you go to the others, and then you'd probably stick on this for the rest of the day because you won't fall over at the end of it.
This is for late on, yeah.
Yeah, or the other way around. You've had a few of these, and then you say, yeah, the hell with it, I'm going.
I'll try the triple share, yeah.
Man, the nose is really nice.
Yeah, you're getting kind of plenty of citrus and stone fruits on the nose there. It's really, really nice. And body on it is really, really good. Kind of helps hold the whole thing up.
Yeah, just about for like, the one that is kind of so light. And that's always a kind of that balance of those lighter beers is kind of how light can you go without just turning into water.
Yeah. Is there a bigger demand for lighter beers now, or is it, you know, because the whole craft, if I remember, like, I mean, at least when it, you know, kind of 10 years, but they were promoting, it was, you got all the publicity from getting the higher and higher and higher alcohol in it. Has it kind of twisted back a bit now, or, you know, no alcohol, low alcohol ones? Is there more of a demand for that?
I think as a whole, but I think that's become a niche. And I think people want like the option at least of kind of lower alcohol beers a lot of the time. And that has become, I think it developed a thing in the last kind of 3 or 4 years, yeah, more than it was before.
Yeah, I think it was a growing trend for a while. And I do think it's one that's kind of here to stay with kind of the tighter and tighter kind of drinking, driving regulations and everything got, you know, people being able to go to a bar or restaurant with their friends and have one kind of anywhere between 3% to 1.5% beer or a few non-alcoholic beers. I think it has slowed in the last 12 months, but I think that's purely because the on-trade is where this market is kind of at its peak.
Okay.
I think we will see it come. We're doing a few non-alcoholic beers, a lager and an IPA. They're selling really, really well. You know, and I think anyone that has done grow IPAs and nano IPAs, I've seen one or two kind of around Ireland. I don't think I've ever heard anyone having trouble selling them, because there is that market there where, you know, and again, you go to, it hasn't been able to be done in the last 12 months, but you go over to someone's, but you have the car and you have the kids, you know, again, 1 or 2, 2%, 2.5%, 3% beers.
Yeah.
Over a couple of hours with some food, and you know, you're trying to carry on, so.
Yeah, no, it makes loads of sense to me, but yeah, just whether that was, you know, whether it was a general trend or whether people were just sticking then with, you know, they just go to minerals or go to kind of, would they still want a good beer that tastes, you know, that's low alcohol, or would they just say, kind of, I'll get a cheap, low lager that I don't care about, because...
Yeah, but I think as the trend has been there now for a couple of years, people have become more fussy and, like... Yeah. The innovation and the quality improvements over low and no alcoholic beers in the last couple of years, like, are miles apart. You know, a non-alcoholic beer 8-9 years ago was terrible. You're handed some now, and you have to be convinced that there's no alcohol in it because it just tastes like a beer.
Right.
You know, and this wasn't achievable a couple of years ago. Or, you know, and it's, yeah. So now that that's there, I think that market will just continue to grow.
Yeah, and that's definitely where the consumers are getting more picky over. I mean, sorry, I remember I used to work in pubs, and I mean, the only non-alcoholic beer you'd ever have was non-alcoholic Erdinger, which everyone would just accept. I think now a lot of, like, the last pub I worked at years ago, I mean, you couldn't sell that, you know, because it was just a taste rubbish, and you had to have Lervig non-alcoholic and XYZ non-alcoholic, and people expected a choice, actually, of non-alcoholic beers in the bar.
Yes.
Just one wasn't enough. You had to have 3 or 4. You know, mm-hmm. That's only going to grow, actually. Like you were saying with the drink driving regulations becoming kind of stricter and stuff, becoming more conscientious of that. I think that's definitely like a here to stay, definitely.
Yeah, it's still not a big trend in Belgium. Nope.
No, they're still drinking.
The 5% is low alcohol.
It's actually, I think, the non-alcoholic beers never made it until now. I don't know why, but I think it's, yeah, it's the quality of the beer. A lot of people are beginning to make non-alcoholic beer. We actually made one, and it's working really well. It's I'm amazed. I was really not convinced when I was going to taste it. I was like, yeah, I mean, I tasted those beer like 5-10 years ago, and I was like, it was really disgusting.
Yeah.
And now it's beginning to be really good.
And it's what's involved in, like, how difficult is it to brew a good non-alcoholic compared to one with lots of alcohol?
I'm going to leave you that question because we don't have the, we only brew a standard beer and then we send it to take out the alcohol, but we don't do port. So I don't know if you guys do, but.
We don't do any non-alcoholic. We do low alcohol stuff, which usually is a bit more tricky to brew and be a lot more careful to not over-sparge it or do different things to it. And you have to use a lot of different kind of adjuncts to try and kind of manufacture a body out of it without giving it fermented water, which can be a challenge.
And actually, I saw that there was actually a question, but how do you get a body like this with such low alcohol? I'm really curious.
So one thing with this beer is that it's got a really, really high proportion of rye, which doesn't even necessarily come out the taste so much, but it just does give it that a lot of the just normal barley wouldn't, and gives it like a higher protein content, stuff like that, which kind of just gives it more like unfermentable sugars. And it's just about trying to get as many unfermentable sugars and as many adjuncts as you can to just try and kind of get that almost false body that the yeast can eat. And just like giving the yeast as little possible sugar to eat.
Yeah. As you can. So that's what the rye is there for.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, okay, cool. I've learned something. I knew that in white beers, that's why we use it, but didn't know it could be used also with very light beers.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, guys, we're over time again. I keep trying to keep it to an hour, and I always lose the battle a little bit. So, listen, thanks a million for taking part. And Francois, thanks a million for coming on and being the first non-Irish.
Thanks a lot for the invitation, also.
If you've been listening to this, you probably enjoy visiting a brewery and trying to, you know, tour it, learn who the people are who make the beers, see how they do it, and just get to know the local of the specifics of that particular brewery. You've probably also found out that it's quite difficult to identify which brewers allow visitors. Many don't because they don't have space, they don't have time. A lot of breweries are gypsy brewers, they don't have their own facilities. So trying to dig all that out can be quite hard. That's why I set up breweryvisits.eu. It's a list of, it's a directory of brewers that allow and welcome visitors. You know, it might be that they have set up tours, you know, kind of tours arranged, or that you can just call them and they're quite happy to show you around. It's still growing. We have about 300 brewers in there out of about thousands that I went through. So if you're interested in actually finding a brewer to visit when you're traveling around Europe, then check out breweryvisits.eu.